Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Tysel Jovel-Phillips, MD, a clinical associate professor in the Division of Hematology and Oncology and Department of Internal Medicine at Rigel Cancer Center and Michigan Medicine, to discuss the clinical experience with BTK inhibitors in mantle cell lymphoma since the approval of the first-in-class agent, ibrutinib, in 2013. In our exclusive interview, Phillips discussed the utility of ibrutinib, acalabrutinib, and zanubrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma, the impact of long-term follow-up data with ibrutinib, and findings from the Phase 3 Sympatico trial that could shake up the treatment paradigm. BTK inhibitors have really changed the landscape for patients with mantle cell lymphoma, and ibrutinib, of course, being the first one to come into the paradigm. So now with 7-plus years of experience with ibrutinib, how have you seen the utility of that agent in clinical practice change? And what have you really learned about the toxicity management associated with it?
I think the good thing with ibrutinib, we have a lot of long-term experience, both, you know, good and bad. I really think when Simon Rule presented the data from me personally, I was surprised about the long-term benefit seeing for patients, especially those who get a complete remission when this agent is utilized in a second-line setting. I think, and to that point, you know, most of us have been utilizing ibrutinib in the third line and some consideration in the second line just because of obviously, the original study looked at patients in a third line setting, and obviously it gave us much better outcomes than some of the other agents we had at that time, such as lenalidomide and bortezomib. I will say since that time, I mean, me personally, it's BTK inhibitors and originally, obviously, ibrutinib was my choice of treatment in second line setting, given the improvement over what we saw from the original paper from Dr. Michael Wang. During this time, I guess we've all become accustomed to some of the side effects, which, you know, obviously color some of our decision-making when it comes to the utilization of ibrutinib and actually choice of which BTK inhibitors we use now, given there are several other alternatives on the market. So, I mean, specifically, obviously, we know about the atrial fibrillation. We see long-term use of some hypertension, myalgias, some of the short-term risks, again, the diarrhea, the AFib, as I mentioned before, and some of the infection risks. So, I just still think ibrutinib, even though, you know, the old saying is that, you know, you can old dogs always shows at spots. I mean, most of us are still very comfortable with the drug because we have, you know, years and years of experience. So for me personally, it's still part of my armamentarium and, you know, a drug I'll continue to use for mantle cell lymphoma patients. But again, we have options. So that's the good part is we can continue just to sort of weigh the pros and cons of all the BTK inhibitors we have now and make the most appropriate choice, you know, based on our patients' needs.
Does age factor into deciding whether or not to treat with ibrutinib?
In some ways, but I think it's age related, but it's more of a situation because as we get older, we get more health issues, start to take more medications. So, and since it's an elderly male patient population, obviously, in some cases, not the healthiest. So, you know, if patients have pre-existing atrial fibrillation, they have pre-existing uncontrolled hypertension, COPD, things of that nature, that may in some ways, you know, sort of impart the decision-making about what we use as far as BTK inhibitor. Obviously, if the patient has, you know, atrial fibrillation, to be honest, we're probably less likely to use ibrutinib compared to zanubrutinib or acalabrutinib in that situation. I mean, the same thing could be said for patients who have like, you know, fibromyalgia or other chronic conditions where you would be concerned about exacerbation of that. And we do know long-term use of ibrutinib will also in some ways increase the blood pressure. So we have to be cognizant of that. Another on the flip side, obviously patients who have very bad reflux, I mean, with what we currently have for acalabrutinib, you know, obviously we're not going to use that. The other things aren't really, you know, that detrimental, but it's really, I would say for ibrutinib, it's really atrial fibrillation and hypertension. And obviously if any chronic, you know, joint aches or pains, we may be less likely to use that compared to the other ones. Not to say these other drugs won't eventually show evidence of hypertension or joint aches and pains, but at least we know the atrial fibrillation risk is much less. And obviously, if there aren't any blood thinners or things like that, much less risk of bleeding from what we can see from the early publications with zanubrutinib and acalabrutinib.
Now, we've also seen long-term follow-up data from Study 1104, which was a pooled analysis, as you said, evaluating ibrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma. So what were some of the key findings from that analysis?
No, I mean, I really think it's what I said before. It's really just the marked improvement in duration of response, especially for those who get a complete remission when ibrutinib is used in a second line setting. I think for me, that was practice changing. And at that point, I did change my practice to start using it in the second line setting instead of potentially waiting. Because again, the difference between the original publication, which again was a more heavily pretreated patient population, versus using this after only one line of therapy, which the rule paper showed there was a marked benefit, obviously indicates that we should use this because obviously it has a much longer duration of response than a lot of agents that we have available to us in the second line setting, especially depending on what chemotherapy agents the patient may receive in the front line.
The SIMPATICO trial is evaluating the combination of ibrutinib and venetoclax. So, in your opinion, are combination regimens sort of the future of ibrutinib? And what else do you see in store regarding the utility of that BTK inhibitor?
I think we're all awaiting the results of SIMPATICO to see if there is any added, I think the complete remission rate will likely be higher. I guess the question we'll have to see if that actually translates into progression-free survival benefit in this patient population. And if it does, and it's significant, then obviously that will likely become the new standard of care. Whether it always remains ibrutinib or just BTK inhibitor plus venetoclax, I guess that's something we'll have to see. Specifically for ibrutinib also, we have the data. We're waiting the data from the SHINE study, which evaluated BR plus ibrutinib versus BR in the frontline setting. I know we have a press release that suggested it's a positive study, but actually, getting our hands on that study data to see, what the benefit is, how durable it is, and what that means for our patients, because that may move ibrutinib up to the frontline, which would obviously change what we do in the second line setting if they were already on ibrutinib and would have failed that before relapsing. So, and then obviously there's some studies, at least in CLL, that may transfer over to mantle. So looking at ibrutinib plus CAR T to see if there's any benefit with inducing more of a response to patients who receive CAR T, should I say.
Now, of course, as we've talked about, there are two other BTK inhibitors approved, acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib for mantle cell lymphoma. So, how do you really approach treatment selection between these agents?
So even though the published data suggests that there potentially may be an efficacy difference, there was a obviously, the acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib patient population is less pretreated compared to ibrutinib. And also, ibrutinib was studied using the Chesson criteria, not the Lugano criteria. So it was a CT-based assessment, not PET. So there's likely some underestimation of response with ibrutinib. So I think overall, we all feel that all three are equally efficacious. I don't think there is at all an efficacy benefit to zanubrutinib or acalabrutinib. What it appears, at least, that there's a safety difference between the three, with acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib looking like they have a cleaner and safer toxicity profile compared to ibrutinib. We basically see this not in MCL, but some of its sister studies that were conducted in Waldenström's in CLL that suggest that, again, these other drugs may be safer than ibrutinib. But again, in MCL, there is no head-to-head study evaluating this. So again, we're sort of just using cross-trial comparison. Which we shouldn't do, but obviously we use what we have and try to make informed decisions based off of that.
What data regarding BTK inhibitors stood out to you that were presented during the 2021 ASH annual meeting?
The biggest highlights that we found, obviously, regarding BTK inhibitors is that it looks like there may be a new formulation of acalabrutinib that may be coming that is not necessarily impacted by the use of PPIs because it's not so dependent on stomach acid. Obviously, the non-covalent BTK inhibitor pirtobrutinib was discussed and evaluated, and obviously where that fits into the growing sort of choices we have in MCL patients is something that we need to further evaluate. There is a current phase three head-to-head study of pirtobrutinib versus investigator's choice, meaning zanubrutinib, ibrutinib, or acalabrutinib, second line or third line MCL. So obviously that'll be a much anticipated study to sort of see where it fits and how it compares to the other drugs. So I think in the next upcoming congresses, obviously the SHINE study should be presented. There was an ECHO study that was conducted by AstraZeneca, which was basically a copycat of the SHINE study. So in that one, it used acalabrutinib plus BR versus BR. So I think we'll have information coming. Obviously, what that means for all of us is yet to be determined. And then obviously we'll make our decisions and, change our practices based off of that. Just as I said, we did off the rule paper.
Are you participating in any ongoing research that you'd like to spotlight?
I think for us, CAR T is a very important and evolving treatment, especially in MCL with the approval Prexicaptogene, which is approved and MCL, both BTK naive and refractory. It had very impressive data, and it was an update that was presented by Dr. Michael Wang. And sort of following on those lines, the bispecific antibodies, a lot of presentations for those, especially even in MCL, that were presented at this upcoming ASH. The data for those also looked very impressive, with a little bit cleaner safety profile than was originally reported with CAR T. So obviously, as that study matures, we'll get some long-term data about the duration of response of that treatment and still follow the duration of response to CAR T, which at least for our patients will allow us to at least have some other options we can utilize post-BTK or in some situations in place of BTK inhibitors and hopefully still have some durable responses. So I think for MCL patients is quite an exciting future. That's, you know, with the T-cell directed therapies, there's some drug antibody conjugates that we'll explore specifically targeting ROR1. So again, compared to where we were, you know, 5 years ago, I mean, we're swimming in choices, not to say that we've actually reached where we need to be, but I think for very rare non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, we've come a long way and we're still making further progress. And I think the future is bright for mantle cell lymphoma patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.